We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. A quote by Michael Fronte. Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Texas Chicks Who Talk Murder. It's me, Shay. I am here and ready to tell you about today's case, but first, as you all know, I gotta ask, how is it going, Barb?
It's going really good. I actually had a good weekend, got to see you and my father and spend his, I guess, late birthday with him because he was out of town and got to see Army Mall.
Yes.
Have a girls' night, so pretty good weekend. How are you?
I'm good as well. Like you said, it was a great weekend. We got to hang out with lots of family and can't complain, right? And we also got to record in person.
Yes.
So that makes it even better. It's always better for us when we can record with each other because we can actually talk to each other. but yeah, so we hope that you all had a great weekend because I know I did. Also, I want to mention that this Thursday will be the voters episode. So make sure you tune in to hear Barb tell the story of the winner. From last week, you guys already know it's not Enrique because Barb covered a great episode last week. But yeah, that is all the business for today. Let's go ahead and get started. So I want to tell you guys about a tragedy that would kill 6 people and at least 3 of them were children. So already trigger warning, this is a child episode. Today's episode will have some triggers in it if you can't tell by the title. So just please feel free to skip through those parts of the episode. I'll do my best to kind of, you know, warn y'all, give y'all warnings when it's about to come up. But before we start, I got my information from NTHF Memorial, Wikipedia, and it's like EnglishAcademic.com. But yeah, so I'll be going through the very tragic story of the Edgar Allan Poe Elementary School bombing. But before we go into it, who did it and why, I want to kind of tell you about what happened on September 15th, 1959. On this day, it seemed like another day at Poe Elementary. The kids flooded the school, bags packed, ready to take on the day. Parents hugging their children and giving them kisses goodbye, not knowing that such a tragedy would happen. On September 15th, a man would arrive at Edgar Allan Poe Elementary, suitcase in hand, to enroll his son into school. See, this man was there to try to enroll him in the school, like his child in the school, but they actually wouldn't do it because the father did not have any of the documentation to enroll him. So basically, he didn't have his birth certificate, he didn't have a social security card, he didn't have anything. So it could be like this man just grabbed this kid off the street and was trying to enroll him as his own child.
Right.
So he notified the school that, okay, well, I guess I'll just bring my paperwork tomorrow. So he just kind of walked out. This man leaves the office and the admin workers didn't think anything of it. When the two started to walk out, the father notices that there's kind of like a bunch of kids playing on the playground. It's recess time at an elementary school. That's common. It was actually towards the end of recess because the teacher, Patricia Johnston, or the students called her Mrs. Johnston, but she kind of like started calling the kids to line up to head inside. Well, this man would walk up to the teacher, paper in hands, with his suitcase and his son, like they all just kind of walked up. Miss Johnston took the papers and tried to read them, but they were like, I guess, illegible documents that maybe he wrote. I'm not really sure. Like, it didn't like clearly say if he hand wrote it or if he like maybe glued a bunch of stuff together. And it was just like basically he just rambled. But yeah, I'm not really sure of that part. Either way, she was trying to read it and it was something like having power in a suitcase or something else that was like get to the children or something along those lines was said. And this struck Mrs. Johnston as really odd. Like, imagine, right? I understand it was 1959, but could you imagine being a teacher and this strange man come up to you with strange paperwork and was saying weird things, like rambling on or whatever?
I would have been like, first of all, why are you over here talking to me? Like, who are you? You need to leave. Like that's the feeling that I would be like, you need to get in your car and leave.
Like, how are you even here? Mm-hmm. Like, why are you even at a playground being a grown man? Yeah, I understand you have a child, but like, you literally came out of the school with your child in hand and then walked up to these children. Like, you'd expect him to just go straight to his car. Like, if he's just picking up his kid from school or whatever. Because, you know, she doesn't know what's happening. But after that all happens, the man tells the kids, hey, y'all, come gather around. I have something to show y'all. So he calls all the kids. They all kind of start walking that way. And as he was doing this, he was, like, kind of gesturing. And I'm kind of showing Barb a little bit. But he was, like, doing this thing with the suitcase. And it was kind of, like, waving around or whatever. And he was trying to get them to come closer. And while he was doing that, he was swinging the suitcase around. At one point, Miss Johnson noticed a weird thing on the bottom of the suitcase. So she looked at it and realized it was a red button. Now tell me what kind of suitcase has a red button on the bottom.
Oh no, I would have been, run! I would have been saying, telling the kids, y'all need to run, go! It may not even be anything, but when you're talking about the danger and life safety of children or anybody in general, I would have been yelling at them, run.
Yes. But as soon as she saw this, she turned, just like you said, she turned and told all the children to get inside, but tried to do it without kind of like triggering the man in any type of way from like being like, I saw the button. I'm getting all the kids inside. She's just like, okay, guys, come inside. It's time to go inside.
Trying to remain calm about the situation.
Which I think she handled it great when you have, especially in 1959 when there was all kinds of world wars and stuff like that. But she would then try to turn to a few older students and tell them to go get the principal right away, but she did it calmly, right? And they went to get principal. I think it was like R.E. Dottie or something like that. And there was nowhere that would tell me if it was a man or a woman.
Hmm.
Which is kind of weird also. But they also would get the only male. So that's why I assume it's a female, right? In the school at the time, who was the school custodian. So they went and found him. They went and found the principal, he or she. And then the two would then try to ask the man with the suitcase to leave the school grounds, but he would not listen. And instead, he had other plans. He would trigger the bomb he had located inside of his suitcase, and there were 6 sticks of dynamite that would go off all at once. That's a crap ton of dynamite in one little suitcase.
I don't even know how much that is. I don't know anything about, like, dynamite and like explosions,
you know,
or
like the red sticks.
Oh, okay.
But there's so six of them in like this small little suitcase.
Wow.
Yeah. And the explosion was so big that a person near thought the U.S. was under attack.
Oh man.
Because, you know, which I guess in the 50s it was normal to worry about that kind of thing, because now we would just be like, we wouldn't be under attack, we would just assume somebody's bombing or terrorists or whatever's happening, right? Then it was more like, oh my God, we're getting bombed. It's time to go, you know.
Get the military involved.
But yeah, so when the police arrived at the school, they were dumbfounded by what they saw. And trigger warning here, like I said, I would try to warn y'all before I say anything, but there were bodies blown to pieces. A hole with what was about like 6 inches deep near and on the playground. The blast was so strong that a child's body was blown over 100 feet away from where the bomb originally detonated.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But of course, as soon as it happened, the police were unsure of who the bomber was. You know, you get there and you're like, I don't know what happened. Like, we're just getting called out here for an explosion. Like, you have no idea. So, of course, they and the National Guard locked the school down and started their investigation. The first thing they assumed was that the person responsible for this would escape. So, while the school was on lockdown, teachers did a roll call in each of the classrooms, and all but those who were killed were present. This was sort of a relief for the investigators. So, now they don't have to worry about finding another kid. Maybe they thought this person bombed because of something they had against the school and they took their child or whatever. So who the heck was this man? The investigators were so confused, they decided to go to the root of the cause, the bomb. They would trace all of the body parts that were found and try to, and like I said, I don't like saying stuff like this, but basically I put the body parts back together to the correct victim, like a puzzle, you know?
To help identify.
Yeah, which is terrible to have to explain, right? Especially when there are children involved and just, you know. As they were doing this, they found that one man was in worse condition than the others. This would make the investigators think, well, that probably means that this person was the closest to the bomb. They would figure the hand that they would find, sorry, not figure, find the hand that belonged to the body, and they were able to get fingerprints. As they ran the prints, they would find out who this man was because he actually had other convictions from the past. So, you know, whenever you run fingerprints in a database, usually they can only find it if they've either been convicted or if their fingerprints are in a database at some point, like if you're military or whatever. So with his convictions, it helped them find out who he was. So, and also, I think his convictions were something about, like, breaking into safes and, like, stealing things out of people's safes and, like, different stuff, but didn't necessarily say, like, exactly what his convictions were. But now that is getting closer and closer to finding who this disgusting person is. They would eventually find his vehicle nearby, and this is when they would finally be able to identify who the bomber was. When they opened up the car doors, they would hit a jackpot. The car would hold all the evidence needed. This included more dynamite, and it would also hold a receipt from August 25th that stated that this person bought detonators and 150 dynamite sticks.
What the heck was he planning to do with 150 sticks of dynamite?
Yeah, like, and I believe this came from Mexico, like, or New Mexico is where he lived, and they would, he would, like, drive back and forth from Houston, or, yeah, from Houston to Mexico or whatever, because that's where he was originally from, and, like, I'll kind of get into it a little bit later, but, yeah, he was just driving around with dynamite in his car, like, from New Mexico to here. Constantly.
That's crazy, because if his car ever caught on fire from a wreck or like just something happening to his vehicle, that would be one huge explosion.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder, like, you only used six, so what were the other 144 sticks of dynamite gonna be used for? And like, why would he have killed himself with all the like, what was his plan? I don't understand.
That's literally in my next thing is, this man had a plan when he bought all of these, and I'm assuming that this was not supposed to be the only place that he would hit, but maybe he just got stuck in a situation and felt the only way out was to go out and...
Because they were going to find the dynamite.
Yeah, because they were asking him to leave, and he wouldn't, and he was just... I feel like it escalated, and he was just like, you know what? Forget it. Hmm. Like, he was like, I've been found out. I'm going to just kill myself now.
But, so...
So he took the coward's way out, basically.
Yeah, and it's making me, like, what about that little kid? Like, I'm assuming he was one of the victims, or she was one of the victims.
Yeah, and I'm about to tell you all of the victims' names now. So, the victims of the bombing were Dusty Paul Orgeron, Jeannie Catherine Coulter, who was 54, James Arley Montgomery, who was 56, William S. Hawes Jr., who was 7, John Cecil Fitch Jr., who was 8, and Paula Harold Orgeron, who was 49. Out of these six victims, who was the bomber? This disgusting excuse for a human was named Paul Harold Orgeron, or however you say that last name. I cannot even process how a man can walk up to the school and plan to kill not only himself, but his child and others as well. I don't know, it's so hard to kind of like wrap my head around it, and I know I will never understand, but as for Paul, there isn't much to information on him, and I'm kind of glad because he can rot for life, but he and his son actually just moved to Houston And Paul and his wife, well, ex-wife at this point, had just separated for the second time because apparently, and like this is all what the wife is saying, that he was abusing her, which I could totally see him doing that. Like, I feel like if you can explode a school, you can beat your wife, right? Mm-hmm. But at the time of the... Oh, sorry. I skipped a line, guys. But based on the wife's testimony, he was an abusive husband, and that is the reason that he and his ex-wife separated. At the time of the bombing, Paul was a tile setter and had actually been renting a home under the name Bob Silver, which is like red flag, why are you renting a house under a different name? Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like as soon as the second time that they got a divorce, maybe he went off the rails and like started doing all this sketchy stuff. And I feel like he made his son a part of it in spite of his wife, his ex-wife.
Yeah, to be like the ultimate, like, this is the ultimate way to hurt mm-hmm. you.
Yeah. But the landlord of the house would tell the police that Paul and his son Dusty were very quiet and stayed to themselves. He mentioned that he never had any issues with them, but that doesn't mean much as we can see. As the police were looking through the car, other investigators were working on trying to figure out the notes, you know, like the ones at the beginning of the episode mm-hmm. That he had handed to the teacher. And they were finally able to find out what they stated. And according to the EnglishAcademic.com website, the first note stated, quote, please do not get excite. And mind y'all, this is just kind of like how he wrote it. It was very unclear to how he wrote it, I guess. But let me start over. So quote was, please do not get excite over this order I'm giving you. In this suitcase you see in my hand is filled to the top with high explosive. I mean high. Please believe me when I say I have two more, and then it says illegible, that are set to go off at two times. I do not believe I can kill and not kill what is around me. And I mean my son will go, do as I say, and no one will get hurt. Please, end quote. And the second note, Barb, if you don't mind, can you go ahead and read this one for them?
Yes. So it says, quote, do not get the police department yet. I'll tell you when. Please do not get excited over this order I'm giving you. In this suitcase you see in my hand, it filled to the top with high explosive. Please do not make me push this button, that all I have to do. And I also have two more cases eligible. High explosive that are set to go off at a certain time at three different places. So it will more harm to kill me. So do as I say and no one will get hurt. And I would like to talk about God while waiting for my wife. End quote.
So just based off of these notes, you can clearly see that he was very clearly planning on doing something very bad, like to the school. And just by like reading how he wrote, you can tell that he wasn't like I guess he didn't have very good English, and this is kind of like I said, what the police were able to even read from his writing. I really think that this is a sign that there was something that happened to him, and it kind of like set off something in his brain, and he just was not sane at the point. Mm-hmm. You know, and he just kind of was doing all of these things. And in 1959, no one understood mental health like we do now. And I definitely believe that there was something mentally happening and something triggered it. Because if he wasn't acting like this before, you know, and who's to say he wasn't, but something set him off to actually write these notes. And this story really breaks my heart, because maybe if the teacher was able to read it, things could have been different. I mean, his writing must have been terrible, because she is an elementary teacher. They are used to reading kids' handwriting. Like, they read kindergartners' handwritings all the time. So if they couldn't read a grown adult's handwriting, clearly that meant something. And it also took professionals to even be able to solve partial of the letter. They couldn't even get everything. So in recent days, it was said that Paul was telling family that he had, quote, found God, end quote. And it was said that he was not a religious man before. So it just, I think it was even like the weekend before this bombing happened, he was like, I found God, and like, God is so on and so, like, he was just ranting about it. And before then he was never.
I mean, in a way, he could have thought that he found God and could have said that, but to have thoughts like these, to me, that is the devil in disguise.
Yep.
To plant these seeds in your brain, like, that's not God.
Yeah.
And he could have thought that God was telling him, go do this.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't.
Yeah, and this, and we see this quite often in these kind of cases. Yep. Whenever they're like, oh, we found God, but then they go out and do these terrible.
Yeah, I mean, just like, what, who was it, Amber Yates, she's mm-hmm. saying that God was telling her to kill her children. Like, that's yeah. not God. And you get, when you're so mentally broken down, whether it is like after, you know, postpartum, or whether it's something imbalance, chemical imbalance in your brain, a bad, very bad divorce that has children involved.
Yep.
It's you, that's the time the devil comes in and like makes his way in and says, God is telling you to do this, but it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And to me, this really just looks like some kind of mental break that happened and something triggered it. I'm going to probably say a divorce, maybe, and he had to move, and there's probably other personal things happening, and it just caused him to kind of go off the rails, basically. But the police were finally able to confirm who the official bomber was, but was never able to really figure out what exactly happened or why he did this. Back in the 50s, this was not as common as it is now. The school would actually open up the next day before everything was even cleared.
Oh my gosh.
So, like, think about how insane that is.
Like, just imagine being a little kid going there, and it's not even probably all the way cleaned yet, and you're literally having to go back into this environment where you were terrified, and you know, in a way, what just happened outside those school doors.
Yeah.
And you're having to go back on that campus.
It's, I think it's just, it's crazy to think that they thought it was okay for their elementary kids to see their former classmates
mm-hmm.
on the ground, basically, right? Less than 50% of the students would show up the first few days, but it would grow slowly as time went by. I mean, it's honestly shocking, but not at the same time.
I mean, and that sucks to say, because I don't really know any other country that has as many bombings and
yeah.
shootings as the United States.
Yeah. I get they didn't know how to handle this, but they could have cleaned things up before allowing elementary kids to go back and see the playground with a hole in the middle of it. But they would actually name two schools after two of the victims.
Aww.
Yeah, I thought that was super sweet. But the fact that I have never heard this case is insane to me, because this happened near Rice University.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty close.
And like, Rice even did like a whole article on this and everything. And I was like, I didn't even know that. So reading about this case was insane. And like, the fact that the kids went back to school the next day blows my mind. But that pretty much is everything. What did you think, Barb?
So I've actually never heard of this story either. And it is crazy, because in a way, I feel like, did we push this under the rug? Like, why is it not being as talked about as some of the other elementary
mm-hmm.
shootings and bombings that killed teachers and students, or high schools or middle schools? Why is it not being talked about?
Yeah.
So to me, I've never heard of it. This was very interesting. Thank you for sharing it.
Yes, of course. This is what we're here for, guys. We want to bring up these cases that nobody's talking about. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I hope you all enjoyed today's episode. Thank you all for joining Barb and I on today's case. Please let us know what you think by emailing us at tcwtm2021@gmail.com, or message us on Instagram at Texas Chicks Who Talk Murder with no spaces, on Twitter at Texas Chicks Who with the number one, or on Facebook at Texas Chicks Who Talk Murder. We are also asking that you guys take a minute of your time and give us a review on whichever platform you're using. This will help us reach a larger audience. Also, please share these stories to your friends and family. As always, we always like to say, stay out of dark places and watch your back, because you never know who's lurking. And please watch for those suitcases. Bye.
Bye.